Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. You're listening. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm Spencer Wilson.
I'm Sean Cloud.
Haley's here with us as well.
Yes, I am.
Lot to talk about. We will get to, obviously, some of all that's happening with LeBron James. We'll get to that. We'll get to a yearly competition that happens on July 4th. We'll talk a little bit about that. We got a giveaway for you. We'll talk World Cup. We'll give you a little bit of a Wimbledon update. We're all over the place today. It's a great show. But we always got to start with what's happening right here in our biggest little city because we have two teams that are going off at the moment. We're going to start with what's happening on the pitch here in Reno with 1868, just continuing to go completely ape on the rest of the competition. They came into their two-game homestand here in sixth place and unbeaten in 12 straight league games. When you thought they couldn't turn it up another notch, they did. And it all started back on Saturday when they hosted the Portland Timbers 2. They won 1-0 in front of a very impressive crowd of 4,603 people that showed up for that game. That is an awesome turnout for the 1868. It was going 0-0 for a while until substitute Danny Musovski, I think is how you pronounce his last name. I'm going to go for it.
I'm not even going to try it.
Danny Musovski scored his fifth goal of the season in the 81st minute off an assist from I'm going to butcher these names. Antoni Hopknot. I'm going to say that's it. Again, I don't know. I'm sorry if you're listening. I butcher your name. I really apologize. I don't mean to do it. Just call me an idiot and let's move on. It was his seventh assist of the year. And although they didn't play their best game defensively, they kind of got caught out a few times. They had to fight off 13 shots in that game against the Portland Timbers too. But you tip your hat to Warzenkowski in goal because he's just a man back there. And he was really able to help this team. When it's a 1-0 game, it really comes down to how well your keeper can play, especially late in the game. And he did a great job. And even though Reno only got 3 shots on goal, they made one of those 3 counts. And it's a solid performance nonetheless, and it's another win. And then came the big game. Last week, we had Eric Edelstein here in studio, and he said that July 3rd of last season was a big game for these guys, and it could be that same way again this year. And it was a huge game for the Reno 1868. So they hosted the Salt Lake Monarchs. They came in. They were the number one seed in the Western Conference. And not only did they beat them, but they beat them 3-0. And this is a significant win for a few reasons. One, it brings their unbeaten streak to now 14, which is a club record. Two, it was their first ever win over the Real Monarchs. And three, this put Reno in sole possession of third place in the Western Conference. So in two games, they go from sixth place to third place. That's accomplishing some great things in a very short amount of time. And they did that in front of even a bigger crowd, as 5,125 fans filed in to see that game on 4th of July Eve, I guess you want to call it, or Independence Day Eve.
Yeah, it was packed. It was, I mean, like everyone knows, I don't really follow soccer, but I was even into it. They got their first goal like the second the game started, it felt like.
Oh, wow.
And then second goal came. By the time the second goal came, you couldn't hear any music that was playing anywhere else. It was just screams and drums going off on the thing, smoke like going over the field. It was crazy. And then the game ended, and you know, I ran the show afterwards, so it was just packed regardless of what happened. So
yeah, Reno came out just pure aggression from the 1868. They led 1-0 at the half after a 32nd-minute goal by Luis Felipe Fernandez, which was his first of the season. So hats off to Luis for getting that monkey off his back and putting some on the scoreboard. And then a second half came, and surprise, surprise, who's back at it? The best substitute in all of the USL, Brian Brown. We talked about him last week. We talked about him the week before because he's just that good. He came on. He scored his first goal in the 57th minute, again, off an assist from Antoine Hopknot. I'm just going to keep saying it that way. If you're out there, follow me on Twitter and help me out and tell me how to pronounce your name.
Watch some videos.
I think they
how
even
you
get
pronounce
it, wrong.
It. Haley, help me out. How you pronounce it?
I don't know. You're the one running the show. It's the Spencer Wilson Show.
Doesn't stop anyone before from chiming in here. But he scored his first goal of the game in the 57th minute off an assist. Again, sounds familiar because these guys have been doing it all season. Then just about 10 minutes later, he scored again off a cross by Paul Marie. Brown's now up to 7 goals this season, which is most on the team and third best in the USL. I mean, this team is playing just outstanding soccer. Again, they've overcome that slow start, which is what they did last year, and we're seeing now this Ian Johnson-led offense. It knows what it wants to do, and it accomplishes that. When you have a guy like Warzynkowski in goal, there's just no stopping this team, and they're playing just – I mean, they just beat the number one team in their conference, so who else is really going to put up a fight? If these guys know the game they want to play, go out there and execute it, there's no stopping them. They're going to do great things. But you guys, I mean, I don't know how much of a soccer fan you are, Haley.
Not really. Not I played much. It in like third grade, okay. But that's my...
When you okay. just run not. Around and hope you're going yeah. in the same direction.
Oh my gosh, I scored on my own team once, so I'm done.
That
not,
happens
yeah.
with third graders, right? I mean, that's just the way life goes.
As long as it makes it in.
But everyone's kind of getting soccer fever right now, and I feel like this team is doing well at a good time to do well in soccer because everyone's freaking out about the World Cup. So to be successful right now, it's fun. It's fun to see this team do well, and it's fun to see that kind of crowd show up. I mean, honestly, Patrick guys on the back for that, or yourselves on the back for that, because that's awesome. That's,
yeah, that was the biggest crowd I've ever seen there. It was huge.
I mean, that game against Real Monarchs, that had to be one of the biggest crowds in their franchise's history. I mean, over 5,000 fans.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they reached that last year. That's awesome for them. But now let's talk about the other team that is playing very good baseball right now. The Reno Aces. They've opened up two games against the Sacramento River Cats, and they've scored 10 runs in both of those games. Now, they're coming off a tough series against Tacoma. They went 1-4 against Tacoma, and that hurt because they had really made some good strides in the series leading up to it. They had, I think, gotten a series win before they had gotten to Tacoma. So to have that kind of performance up there was really kind of a letdown. But it's important, and we've said this a lot, especially during baseball season, to not let those letdowns hang around for too long. You know, you can be a little upset about it, but by the time you get up the next day, you have to be ready to play that next game because you only get 1 or 2 days off without a game in a month of baseball. So it's important for you to move past that, and they really, really moved past it. They did a really good job of it. Again, like I said, they came into this series on a 3-game losing streak, but it feels so distant now after watching these last two games. It all started a couple days ago on July 4th in front of just another massive crowd at Greater Nevada Field. Again, the number I saw was 10,311 people were there watching that game. I saw photos, and it looked like a championship game. It really did.
And it felt like one, too. They played – I remember going into work that day being like, you know what? If they lose on the 4th of July at home, something's up here. Something's got to change. But yeah. You know what? They came, and they just destroyed.
10 runs off 13 hits, which propelled them to a 10-5 win, and it was really a big third inning that helped them out. They got 6 runs in that third inning, gave them a 7-2 lead. Michael Perez went 3-for-4 with a home run and 3 RBIs. And then Crone. Crone is playing an outstanding baseball right now, but he recorded his 15th multi-RBI game that night. And listen to how this breaks down, because this is just, I'm impressed. He's got 3 6-plus RBI games, 2 4 RBI games, 3 3 RBI games, and 7 2 RBI games.
Wow.
I mean, that's just great batting right there from one individual. And speaking of individuals, I actually meant to do this before I started talking about the Aces, but a big shout-out to Socrates Brito, who just got named Pacific Coast League Player of the Month for June. So congratulations, Socrates. Well-earned and well-deserved. But these guys just going off in this whole series so far, and pitching was on fire in that first game. Matt Koch going 6 innings and allowing just 1 hit. Of course, it was a 2-run home run. That's how Sacramento got their first 2 runs. But 1 hit, striking out 6. That's one of the more solid pitching performances we've seen from a starter this year, especially in the last couple rotations throughout the starting lineup. But here's a fun fact that the Reno Aces outdrew the Miami Marlins on 4th of July.
Really?
So the 10,000-plus came to see the Aces play here. Just over 7,000 fans went to go see the Miami Marlins play on 4th of July. Oh. I don't think Miami is really supporting that team right now. Don't think they really care for the Marlins.
Apparently not.
I wonder what Jeter thought. If Derek Jeter was there on 4th of July and looked at this 90% empty stadium and just thought, man, am I over my head right now with this?
Well, I'd want to see the rest of the stats, because you got to think you're also in a state that has like Disney and everything, which
That's
is only
true.
A couple hour drive away, and Disney fireworks on 4th of July.
Yeah.
And
Disney
New
World
Year's.
Fireworks, that's got to be something.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, I mean, gosh, I can't imagine.
So if I had the choice, I probably would go to Disney instead of the game, too.
That stuff, it's a tough place to compete on a holiday like that. So, but yeah, that's got to hurt. Got to hurt management a little bit there. But then how do you top that? I mean, you bring in 10,000 plus. You have this great opening game on the 4th of July. You have all these fireworks. How do you top that? You top it with a walk-off win. That's how you top it. Crazy start to last night's game. I was there. I was at the Thirsty Thursday remote. I was there for the first couple innings, and it looked like we're getting close to the home run derby. It looked like a home run derby in those first few innings. 8-0 lead for Reno after four innings in that game last night. Overall in the game, Negron went 2-for-3 with a home run and an RBI. Crone went 3-for-4 with a home run and three RBIs. And Caracuto went 3-for-4 with an RBI. Again, just a series where all these guys are finding their rhythm. And you got nervous because when Sacramento tied it up in the top of the ninth, you thought, are we going to go do this again? A great start. Are they going to somehow let this escape themselves? But Yosmani Tomas went up to the plate. He worked it to a 2-2 count and was able to get a ball deep enough to get Kevin Medrano in for the win and just set the people off. I mean, you want to talk about a fun 4th of July. The day after, you get a walk-off win like that.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be sitting in the studio till midnight again. That's what it felt like when it tied up. And I didn't even jinx it or anything this time. I was a good little boy. Everything was fine. No one said anything wrong. There was no jinxing on radio. You know, John Ramey wasn't on the call, so there's definitely no jinxing going on. But either way, we get tied up 9-9, and I just remember running up to a wall and just, like, wanting to punch it through it. And being
I've been
like,
there before.
How could you give up? I mean, our pitching was stellar. We had, who was it? Who was our pitcher that started? I'm not going to pronounce his name. Either way.
I feel you. I've messed up the guy's name twice. It doesn't feel good today.
It's like,
no, three times.
Oh, thanks, Haley. Thanks. Where were you chiming in when I asked you for his name? She chimed in to tell me I got it wrong for a third time, though.
Either way, he pitched a good, you know, four innings. And then in the sixth inning, he let those five runs come in. Then we switched over to Shipley, who did decent, and then even someone scored on Scherfey too, which was the tying run. And at that point, I was just like, okay, so we don't have a closing pitcher anymore. let's just pray and hope that we're not here till 12 and we lose. Then, you know, Tomas, they walk to someone, we got two singles, someone's on third in scoring position, and when all of a sudden Tomas gets up and hits it, and at that time the game was over, and I was just like, thank God.
First walk-off win for the Aces this year, so that's exciting. Congratulations to the Reno Aces. Continue to get out there and celebrate. They got three more games tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday before they hit the All-Star break, so get out there and enjoy yourself some baseball.
One other thing to mention is the past two series that we've played against Sacramento, we've lost.
Oh, well, there you go.
So
win tonight breaks that streak.
Exactly. We need this win.
There we go. Teased it before the show. When we come back, we're opening up the phone lines. You can call in. It's 775-333-0945. You got a question, a comment, a concern, if you're concerned about anything in the world.
You want to tell Spencer how to pronounce something?
Yeah, if you want to tell me how to pronounce that poor guy's name so I don't do it again, you can do that as well. Be kind, though. Keep it clean. But feel free to call in. 775-333-0945. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Welcome back indeed. So a couple days ago, obviously, was Independence Day. Let me ask you guys this, because this bugs me, and it's bugged me for the last couple years. Do you guys say Happy 4th of July, or do you actually say Happy Independence Day?
I say Happy Independence Day.
I say Happy 4th of July.
See, that bugs me a little bit. Why is that? Yeah. Why is that? Because you don't go around saying Happy October 31st on Halloween.
Yeah.
Or Happy February 14th on Valentine's Day. Not that I'm going to say don't say it. I'm just saying, like...
Yeah.
It's Independence Day.
Yeah,
it's the official holiday.
It's the day that, you know, we fought aliens and stuff.
Yeah, man. Will Smith saved us. No, I don't know. I heard a couple people say that to me yesterday or a couple days ago, like, Happy 4th. And it just, I don't know why it bugged me. Not enough to turn around and make a scene out of it. But, like, I'm walking away. It's kind of like, oh, it's Independence Day.
I feel like I would have made a scene like, how dare you say that?
But there's a tradition every Independence Day where on Coney Island, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest takes place. And surprise, surprise, Joey Chestnut. First off, if you don't know the world of professional eating, I'm not that too familiar with it either. But
you're getting there.
I'm getting there. I get there with pretty much every sport eventually. But Joey Chestnut is like the Michael Jordan – the Joe Montana, what, you know, insert sport and historical great player here name. But basically, he is the guy in the world of eating. He won again this year. It's his 11th mustard belt is what they call it. So he's won this competition 11 times. Yeah, it's called the mustard belt. He won it for the 11th time, and he did it in record fashion, eating 74 hot dogs in 10 minutes.
Wow.
That's, I mean, I like hot dogs too, but that's a lot in 10 minutes. I think I heard it was something like 22,000 calories is what he ingested in that amount of time. What blows me away though is like they ask him, he was on Golic and Wingo the next day, and they asked him, you know, how do you feel after a competition? Like, how does it affect your body? And he goes, well, you know, it's like a fighter or like anybody. You just get used to it. You get used to getting up and, like, feeling a little sluggish and a little, like, you know, just kind of bloated. It's just what happens. It gets better. You just get used to it. And I started thinking, like, how much that must have just, like, been awful when he started. Like, imagine eating that in your first time and you wake up the next day, like, right after your first eating competition. I bet it's I imagine the same as, like, a hangover. Mm-hmm. You get up, you don't want to move, you're just in pain constantly, or a food coma, yeah. But I brought up some of his other eating records, and I wanted to know, like, if you guys, hypothetically, let's say you had, I don't know, a month, 2 months to train, to prepare, do you think you could beat these eating records? So we talked about hot dogs. First off, how many hot dogs do you guys think you could eat in 10 minutes if you had, like, a fair amount of time to train?
Zero.
You just don't like hot dogs?
Hot dogs are disgusting.
Well, you guys could have started off there. We wouldn't have had to have wasted all this time explaining this.
I did a pancake eating contest once, and I was so sick. I couldn't eat pancakes for like
a year. How many pancakes did you eat?
I think it was only maybe like 12. But
how much time?
I actually don't know. It wasn't so much like quantity. It was just you had to beat the other guys.
Oh, gotcha.
And I was up against like three fraternity guys, and I was the only girl going.
They were probably all coming off hangovers.
They
like
stuffed their face. They were stuffing their face, and they're like, "Go, Haley, go!" And I was just like, "Thanks, guys."
How do you guys feel about apple pie? Do you guys like apple pie?
I can do apple pie.
Okay, so his current record for apple pie in 8 minutes, he ate 4.375. 3 pound pies.
Oh,
so almost 5 whole 3 pound pies.
Now, when you say the whole pie, do I have to like lick the thing clean?
I don't believe you have to lick it clean. I believe you just have to get all of the major chunks and pieces. Like if there's a loose cherry that escaped, I believe you would have to eat that loose cherry, but I don't think they're going to make you pick it up and lick the pan clean.
I could probably eat
unless you want to. I don't think this rule says you can't. I think it's just going to hurt your time and your stats.
I think if I won, I'd be like, yeah. I'm going to lick everything off just to do it.
Like a victory lick, like through the – that's fine.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Have you seen the videos of when they do the hot dog and everything eating?
I watched it this year, yes. It's like a very borderline of I don't want to watch because it makes me nauseous, but I'm also a little impressed, so I keep watching.
Yeah, they dip the hot dogs in water like to make the bun easier to eat.
Because you have to eat the dog and the bun. Like, you can't just eat one or the other, so they soak the bun, so it literally just slides down
there. With the bread in there, I'm even worse. I'm like done at that point. I'd die after two. My allergies would kick in. I'd just be like,
"Oh no!"
I was about to ask you if you had allergies. I was like, "That's a little dramatic, Sean. It's just a hot dog."
You didn't notice that? Oh, you weren't at the barbecue.
I wasn't at the barbecue.
Everyone had bread and everything, and I just had like two patties and no bread or anything, and that was it. And everyone's like, "Why? What are you doing?" I was like, "This is how I survive."
Yeah.
Would you want it to be apple pie, or do you have another pie that you would substitute it for?
Pumpkin. Honestly, is there a crab eating contest?
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin pie
would be good.
Yeah.
Is there a what?
A crab eating contest?
I don't know. Let me see.
Because I would do that.
He's got deep fried asparagus on here. He's got burritos. He's got chicken wings, donuts, hard gumbo, hamburgers, shrimp wontons.
I could do shrimp wontons.
I could go crazy on some sushi.
So in 8 minutes, he ate 390 shrimp wontons.
No. That's ridiculous.
390?
390.
How big are they?
I don't.
I wonder if they're the
equivalent
small ones.
To a Maybe. Six. Oh, I guess not one, but all of what he ate was equivalent to 69 6 ounce filet mignons.
Wow.
Where does he put it all? He's not even that big of a guy.
That's the crazy thing, though, about these professional eaters. Like, just if you were to watch, like, when you watch people run, you go, how can they run that fast? It doesn't even seem humanly possible. You just train your system to literally just, like, expand your stomach and learn how to pack the stuff in there. No, it's crazy.
I watched some documentary where they were following a professional like eater, uh-huh. and he would just eat like whole grapes yeah. to stretch his stomach.
Like it's crazy. Well, I had some friends that would. I mean, they weren't competitive eaters, but we'd go to get sushi. They'd pretty much like fast the whole day before, so they mm-hmm. could just eat all you could, like sushi. And it would blow my mind watching them. They'd get like 8 or 9 plates of sushi, and I'm like, how are you doing this? How are you gonna get up and walk out of this restaurant?
My sushi's boyfriend. Hard. Has 3 friends from his powerlifting gym anytime they walk into EG, they're banned because they're like really big dudes. And they went into EG one time and they ate so much sushi that the owner was like, you can no longer come back here together.
It's tough. Like,
yeah. All right. I think I found one that I could beat.
Ooh, okay.
The bacon.
The bacon. What's his bacon record?
Well, it's not his record. Oh, okay. It's Matt Stoney, but he only ate 182 strips of Smithfield bacon in Daytona, Florida in 5 minutes.
Wow.
I feel like I might be able to beat that. I love bacon.
Do you have to go one strip at a time, or can you pick like 4 or 5 strips up? Because you can like stack strips, and you can probably get there a little bit faster. Do you have to go one strip at a time?
I have no idea. I'm just looking at a list.
Gotcha.
It doesn't
All
tell
right.
me that.
Looking, All right.
I'm looking for a crab right now. There's a birthday cake one. That's
oh, my
cool.
gosh.
Matt Stoney has that 14.5 pounds in 8 minutes.
I'm going to vomit right now. That just makes like 14.5 pounds of like frosting and cake and all that. I mean, it sounds like a fun idea to start, but I bet like halfway through you just hate yourself.
Here's one that Joey Chestnut has. I think this one's great. 54 brain tacos.
Brain tacos?
yeah. On the zombie pub crawl.
Ooh.
Because he's from Vallejo, so he's close to us.
Yeah.
So he could, I never know, but he did that in 8 minutes.
That's funny. He also has the record for Taco Bell tacos. He ate 53 beef soft tacos in 10 minutes.
80 chicken nuggets in 5 minutes.
You know what? I might be able to do with that with, like, the Doritos.
Yeah?
Like if I've had enough, like, Dirty Shirley Temples and Taco Bell, it's like, okay, yeah.
it's the equivalent to 35 servings of Ben & Jerry's half-baked ice cream.
Ooh.
It's interesting how they pick the equivalent foods. Like, how do you, like, what made you go from Taco Bell tacos to comparing that to Ben and Jerry's ice cream? I almost said Tom and Jerry's ice cream. I almost said that. Tom and Jerry's ice cream instead of Ben and Jerry's. I almost made the mistake. I caught myself, though, so we're fine. But honestly, I mean, looking at these records, I'm getting sick to my stomach. I don't think I could make it as a professional eater. I just don't think it's possible.
I think we should try it just to, like, an in-house contest.
Let's go to Wingfest and see if there's a competitive wing eating contest, and let's just see how we do.
I'm down.
I hope it's just not, like, hot wings. I can't do hot. I'm not mm-hmm. good with spicy foods.
So, yeah, do you like dipping with your wings, or do you just eat it how it is?
I mean, I just want the sauce on top of the wings.
What kind of sauce?
I mean, usually barbecue. A nice barbecue sauce or, like, a teriyaki sauce. Yeah. I enjoy that.
What about you, Haley?
For me, I'm always looking for a way to just eat ranch.
Do you have wings with your ranch, Haley?
yeah, because we went to a restaurant one time, and I was like, oh, I think I really want onion rings. And Scotty goes, do you want onion rings or do you want ranch? And I was like, I want ranch.
you can't, I mean, everyone's got their, I mean, I'm a ketchup guy. I know people, like, cringe at that, but I enjoy it.
I knew a kid once who ate artichokes with ketchup.
Interesting. My dad and my sister would eat artichokes with mayonnaise.
I've seen that too.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, I'm not a big artichoke fan though.
Mm-mm.
Not a big fan of artichokes, but I know. Ultimately, I don't think I can make it as a professional eater, but hats off to the guys that could, because it's still, I mean, regardless of whether or not you want to call it a sport, it's a competition, and it does take some skill to not vomit or die in that competition.
Just one more for Joey
Chestnut.
Sean's
got one more here.
He holds the record for Hostess donuts, 257 in 6 minutes.
Wow.
On June 1st this year. So he's already broken 2 more records this year.
That's insane. Yeah.
Are those the curly Q's on top?
No. Yeah.
The little brownie ones?
No, I think it's just the little mini donuts that come in like the 6-pack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the bag, yeah.
So there you go. If you want to try and make it as a professional eater, get used to feeling very sick in the morning. But what's not going to make you feel sick in the morning is Sean's prize. Sean, what we got for the people?
We got another 4-pack of tickets to the American Century Championship at Edgewood in Tahoe as part of our celebration for being your sports station for 50 years. Now, these are only valid for the 10th through the 12th, one day. So you got to pick a day.
Yeah, the 10th, 11th, or 12th. You get it. Yeah, you do get the full day, but you got to pick one of those days, and you have to. I mean, pick it up either today if you can make it by 5:30. You can pick it up today, or you can pick it up Monday after 10 a.m. But caller number 9, I believe, gets those at 775-333-0945. So be caller number 9 right now. We're talking World Cup after the break. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. That's right. We're back. So quick Wimbledon update before we get into the World Cup, because that's not the only thing going on right now. The third tennis major of the year and maybe the biggest one. Definitely the fanciest one. Definitely the fanciest one. Wimbledon is underway, so I'll give you a quick recap real quickly. They're halfway through the third round. They're playing the third round, so they have people advancing to the fourth round or the round of 16, whichever one you want to call it. But basically some of the big names are still in it. Federer, number one overall seed, he's still in it. We had four Americans make it on the men's side to the third round. One has advanced, or actually two have advanced. Isner and McDaniel to the third round, to the fourth round. And then one has gone home. And I believe one still plays tomorrow when they play the second half of the bracket. Yes, Tiafoe plays tomorrow as well. He's the last American men to get going. And the American women, man, they started off really nicely, and they kind of hit a rough patch. We had three women going into the third round. It was the Williams sisters, Serena and Venus, and then Madison Keys. All three played today, and two out of the three lost. Venus Williams and Madison Keys are both going home, so Serena Williams is the lone American woman standing in the Wimbledon right now.
I saw Venus go home.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it's still impressive that, I mean, the Williams sisters have been around for, what, like 15 years, something like that? So the fact they're still out there competing, and Serena just had a baby a little while. I think Venus had a baby not too far off either.
Sure,
but congratulations to Serena for being the one lone American woman still standing. I'll be rooting for her. I don't know if we do. Oh, yeah, we do. She'll be playing Russia's Radina. Radina is who she'll be playing in the fourth round. So pulling for Serena, I think that'll happen. I want to say it'll happen on Sunday. I think they'll play the second half of the third round tomorrow and then pick up the fourth round on Sunday. Or they may switch it to Monday. I think there's something they do with the round of 16 at Wimbledon. I think it's like round of 16 Monday or something like that. But very impressive to see Serena still going. A little bit of a bummer that we don't have more Americans in it still. But we'll root for Serena and Isner and McDonald as well. And if Tiafoe makes it through, root for him as well. But that's where Wimbledon lines up at the All England Club. But now let's talk about the World Cup, because we are down to six teams, because two teams have punched their way to the semifinals, but we still have two quarterfinals to play. But let's recap the round of 16 real quickly, because that started on Saturday. We didn't get a chance to talk about it last week. So just real quickly going to recap the round of 16 here. It started off with France and Argentina, and they put on just an absolute classic of a match. France won 4-3, but it was back and forth. France had a 1-0 lead, and I think Argentina went on two or three straight goals. France ended on three straight goals. So very, very fun to watch that game. Messi out. And really, to be honest, a less than stellar competition, a really less than a great showing. Argentina kind of stumbled their whole way through the group stage. They were able to pull off a win and get a little bit of help to move on to the round of 16. But it just didn't feel like they were going to be able to make that run to really solidify them as a contender. And not too surprised they went out against a French team that is playing great soccer right now. And then Uruguay knocked out Portugal 2-1. So Messi and Ronaldo getting knocked out on the exact same day. That's like an ultimate soccer fan's worst nightmare. That would wake them up screaming in a pool of sweat in the middle of the night if Messi and Ronaldo went on the same day. But they did. They're gone. And then we started off the next day. We got two back-to-back penalty kicks, which were probably the most fun thing about soccer and about the World Cup, because you want to talk about drama. There's no more drama than walking up and literally have every single kick, meaning you can go home or keep playing. But a lot of fun. Hosts Russia upset another favorite in Spain 4-3 on penalties after what you could call the save of the tournament. Russia's goalkeeper, Igor Akinfeev, I think is how you pronounce it, was just able to get his top foot on it. He dove right and was just able to keep his top foot up high enough to catch some of the ball and knock it over the net, advancing Russia to the next round. And then Croatia beat Denmark on a 3-2 on penalties in a much more defensive 1-1 game. Spain and Russia were 1-1 as well, but it seemed like they were attacking each other a lot more. Denmark and Croatia really sat back and tested each other defensively, but Croatia eventually got it 3-2 on penalties. And then we saw Brazil play Mexico to open up day three, and really it was a very even first half. Mexico kind of dominated the first 20 minutes, and then Brazil kind of fought back, but it was scoreless at halftime, and honestly, I thought Mexico could have a chance. With it being scoreless at halftime, they were getting an attack forward, they were making Brazil think, and I thought that this could be the round where we see literally all the favorites lose. Germany, Spain, and Brazil could all be out. But Brazil, again, did what they did, played soccer the only way they know how to play, and won 2-0 over Mexico. And then we got another spectacular second half in what is now my new favorite game of the tournament, which was Belgium and Japan.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about this one.
Scoreless through halftime, and I'm very nervous. I had a lot of confidence in Belgium they can get past Japan. And I was really, really confident. Like, all right, 0-0, 45 minutes in, not a big deal. They'll open it up here more in the second half, and they'll take over. 2-0 lead for Japan in the first 7 minutes of the second half. A 48th minute goal and a 52nd minute goal put Japan 2 up. I'm pacing around my house.
I figured
like, this couldn't, this can't happen. Like, Belgium can't lose to Japan right now. So I'm like, all right, they got to get a goal before 70 minutes. Like, they got to get something on the board here. Like, I was freaking out. But Belgium, they did. I think they got one in the 69th minute. They got one, I think, in the late 70s. And it's 2-2. And I'm preparing for extra time. I think Japan was preparing for extra time. And what happens? Belgium literally goes end to end in about a minute and scores a goal-ahead goal, making it 3-2. About as close to a buzzer beater as you can get in soccer. I think there was 4 or 5 minutes of added time put on the end of the match, and they scored in the 90th minute plus four, so they were about a minute or so away from the game being over before they got that go-ahead goal. It was super, super exciting to watch, super dramatic, and just one of the main reasons why you love this tournament, because it's never really over. We've seen so many late goals in this game, or in this tournament, and it was just a lot of fun to watch that come back. And it was a lot of fun for me because I got another pick right. And then on the final day of the round of 16, we went from arguably the most thrilling game to the least thrilling game in Switzerland and Sweden, just because they're two really defensive-minded teams, and you could see that. And really, Sweden, I mean, they won 1-0, but literally Switzerland beat themselves. It was an own goal that put Sweden up 1-0. So Switzerland literally knocked themselves out of the tournament. But hats off to Sweden. They're making a run now. I mean, literally with people out of the tournament right now, with Germany out, with Spain out, we'll get to Brazil. I mean, this tournament is wide open right now for this final run. But then we had England and Colombia, which was the last game of the round of 16, and Colombia lost to England 4-3 in a shootout in what was really a team-wide redemption story. If you follow World Cup history, like I've become very passionate about, I love this tournament. England has struggled a lot in when it comes to penalty kicks in the World Cup, and it felt like this whole team exercised that giant demon against Colombia, beating them 4-3 on penalty kicks. So very excited for England, and hopefully, again, I get that one right. So I went 5-for-8 in the quarterfinal round.
It's not bad.
Not bad. It's okay. It's a little over 50%. Wasn't super happy about it, but I'll take it. I think that put me at 17-for-24, I think. Between the group stage and the round of 16 overall. So, again, not horrible.
Well, and I feel like if Belgium had lost, because we were texting through that.
We were texting through that.
And I was like, if Belgium loses, like, he's going to lose his mind right now. He's going to go nuts. He's going to go off.
Like, I thought I had two for sures, which was Belgium and Brazil. And I got Brazil, and I was sitting there watching that Belgium game. Like, no way am I not going to get this game right now. Come on, Belgium. But then we had the quarterfinals, and that started today. We had Uruguay versus France. I tweeted out my four picks last night, so you can go to my Twitter at My2Spensworth and see that I am not lying when I say this. But I picked France to win this game, and really just because all around with their star power, with their focus, they just seemed like a team on a mission right now, and they played really, really well again. They got their first goal off a free kick in the first half. They really were able to use Uruguay's physicality against them. I thought that may be something that could throw France off in this game, but they were really able to use it to their advantage. They got a free kick in the first half. They converted it to go up 1-0, and then their goalkeeper made a huge one-handed save at the end of the first half. It was a beautiful corner kick by Uruguay. It was just tailored for the back of the net, and the guy extends one hand. His right hand just knocks it away beautifully. That really helped him. The Uruguayan goalkeeper made a mistake, gave France a second goal in the second half, and they ended up winning 2-0 over Uruguay. But France looked like they were going to win that game from the get-go. And then we had Belgium versus Brazil, really what felt like the biggest game of the quarterfinals. This one felt like it was the hyped up, the main event of this round, and it really, I mean, it lived up to it. The first half, Belgium jumped out to a 2-0 lead, really kind of shocking. It looked like shocking Brazil in all. They didn't really expect that attack to get to them that early, but man, Belgium was just super, super aggressive coming out of the gate. They were able to put a 2-0 lead up, and then Brazil, again, played the only style of football they know how to play, and really, it's all come in the second half for them. You look at the group stage, they've had a really good second half through all of those games, and I thought this was going to be karma working its way back around. Belgium has a 2-0 lead. Please don't tell me Brazil's about to mount a comeback and beat them 3-2. I know Japan would have like their own celebration. Like, yeah, how's it feel, Belgium? How's it feel to give up a 2-goal lead?
We're going
to
put your flag on a coffin now.
Brazil did get one back. It was 2-1. They scored, I think, in like the 50, 60-something minute, I think it was. But basically the last 20-plus minutes, Belgium had a 2-1 lead, and I was gnawing on my fingernails. Like, please don't give this up. And, man, they had some good chances at the end there. A questionable call, I guess. To me, it looked like Neymar dove. Brazil put up a pretty big fight on the bench that could have been a foul. I didn't think it was. Basically, it was a cross. Neymar went to the goal to try and get it far post. A Belgium defender who was clearly beat kind of tugged on his back, and then you could see him kind of pull his hand off, and that's when Neymar dove. So I think it was a good no call. But obviously everyone in Brazil right now would disagree with me very, very passionately and very, very loudly.
They're going to come hunting for you now.
They are, man. Yeah. What Brazilian's going to make a trek all the way up here to, like, the Sierra Nevada mountains?
You don't know. They may have.
I don't. They're very crazy passionate about that soccer team, man. I'm not entirely worried, though. Watch me not make it to Monday now.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Has anyone seen Spencer? He's supposed to be here at 9 a.m.
Have you heard from him? His car is painted green and yellow. I don't know if that's something we should worry about. But then tomorrow we'll have the other two quarterfinal games. Croatia will play host Russia. And honestly, be very aware of Croatia. This is a sleeping giant that has played so, so well in this tournament. And they could easily beat Russia. I'm picking Croatia. I think they will. And then England will play Sweden in the other quarterfinal. I picked England. I just think, again, overall team, they're better. They'll be able to play defense against Sweden and be able to mount their own offense because they got some guys. Kane, Vardy, all those guys are just playing really, really well right now. So I'm picking England and Croatia to go through tomorrow, and we will see what happens. If we know one thing, it'll be dramatic. It'll be fun. It'll be entertaining. They're going to both be on Fox tomorrow morning at 7 and 11 a.m. So check it out. Enjoy it. It's a fun tournament. It's been a fun tournament, and it's promises to be one to remember coming down the stretch. Speaking of championships, though, LeBron James is in Los Angeles with a couple other guys, and we'll talk about that coming after the break. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Welcome back inside the studio. So I know we've all heard it. LeBron James is in Los Angeles. He signed a 4-year deal with the Lakers. We know this. I'm not breaking this news to anybody. But what I wanted to kind of float out there was not so much LeBron's legacy in this aspect, but what does the Lakers brand mean to LeBron? Because it seems as though, I mean, between Cleveland and Miami, those aren't really two teams that have a lot of history in the NBA. And now he's with a team that has a ton of history. And I feel like it wasn't so much where he wanted to go to win a championship. I don't feel like it's really a championship team in Los Angeles. They're a playoff contender for sure. But to say that this team can get by a team like the Warriors, get by a team like the Rockets, I'm just not sure if that's the case. And it surprised me it's not surprising that he's in LA, but it's surprising to me that he didn't go to a place where he could really be a championship contender. And again, it could be next year. I mean, not this coming season, but the season after, his second season in Los Angeles. That could be a possible championship season, because there have been reports that Damian Lillard now, who's a point guard for the Portland Trail Blazers, could be thinking about going to join LeBron in L.A. Again, those are just rumors. But now that Carmelo Anthony has been released from OKC after they haven't been able to afford him, could Melo. But again, when I heard that they had signed Rondo and Stevenson, these aren't young guys. These aren't guys that can really fly around LeBron and help him. Stevenson's more of a defensive-minded player and a guy who likes to blow in people's ears. And then you have do you remember that?
Yeah.
When the Pacers and the Heat would meet up in the playoffs and Stevenson would be guarding LeBron, he'd blow in his ear. There's like 60,000 memes that came out of that. Yeah. But these aren't guys that really fly around. And there's been one thing everyone's talked about. Whatever team LeBron's on, he needs scorers around him. And these guys aren't scorers. Stevenson's more defensive-minded, and Rondo's more of a distributor. So, and I mean, they signed JaVale McGee as well. Is he going to start? I'd be a little surprised if he did. I feel like he's more of an off-the-bench kind of a guy. I mean, he's a solid player, regardless of the fact that he was on Shaquille O'Neal's blooper reel for like the first 7 years of his career. But he's a solid player. But I just don't feel like this team has got what it takes, even if you add Melo, because, again, these are guys that are all towards kind of the tail end of their career. So what are you really trying to put together here? So I feel like this isn't so much a championship opportunity. It's more just for LeBron to be like, all right, yeah, I was a Laker. I feel like it's just more for him to wear the same jersey that Magic wore, that Kobe wore, that Kareem wore, and be a part of that fraternity of Lakers that have worn this jersey and played great basketball.
Well, and he'll probably also retire from being a Laker and retire to L.A. because he has houses there. He runs a production company.
Family. He's got family
so
there, too.
So many things to happen, you know. And then from there with his, you know, millions of dollars that he's made over the past couple of years, he's just going to go and buy the Cavs after that anyway. So.
I mean, he could. He definitely could do that.
But I do agree. I think he's just taking it more or less like, you know, there's the Kobe and Shaq, there's Magic, there's all these greats that we know. Like, you know, 20 years from now, are we really going to look back on Curry and be like, oh, yeah, Curry was a great player? It may be in that discussion, but it most likely won't. The discussion is going to be like, LeBron moved to the Lakers. If you want to be well-known, some way you're going to move to the Lakers or somewhere else. I don't even think it's really a championship team, because if it was like that, then this past year they probably would have built a better team around him in general, because he just carried that team the entire distance.
Yeah, he did. And there's been reports that it's more about having an all-around team. So LeBron, again, doesn't want to play what was nicknamed hero ball like he had to do in Cleveland, basically, again, carrying these guys all the way through the season. So they're trying to put together a more all-around team so that he can focus on kind of post-play and maybe a little defense or whatever. But it sounds like they're trying to make it so that he doesn't have to play three or four positions at once.
Maybe his knees hurt.
It could be, man.
He just doesn't want to tell anyone he's really injured. He, like, broke a rib in the final.
I feel like the pitch, all that Johnson had to say to LeBron was, hey, you can either carry a team and then walk outside into a blizzard, or you can carry a team and then go sit on the beach for the rest of the night.
And if you don't want to play, you can just go sit on the beach.
Yeah, you can just sit on the beach. But also, this now brings back the discussion of L.A. being a powerhouse team in the NBA. And I've heard this conversation the last couple days, and this annoys me to no end. When someone goes, oh, well, basketball is better if L.A. is doing well, or baseball is better if New York is doing well.
Yeah.
Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but the Lakers have been awful the last three seasons, and all viewership has done in the NBA is go up.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need the Lakers to be a good team. Yeah, it's fun to see the Lakers be a good team, because, again, this is a franchise with a ton of history. It's got a passionate fan base, and man, is that bandwagon gonna break when LeBron arrives on the court in LA. I mean, so many people are gonna ditch the Clippers to put on the green, to put on the, I almost said green and gold again, put on the purple and gold. But I don't think that's true. I don't think that basketball is better if LA is better. I don't think baseball is better if the Yankees do well. You had the Dodgers and the Astros in the World Series last year, a ton of people tuned in to watch that. I don't feel like you need these teams to be good for franchises and leagues to succeed, because I think in doing that, you're limiting everything else. If you're going to say that NBA is better just when the Lakers are better, what about the other 29 teams that are playing out of their mind right now? I think the Warriors have helped the NBA in loads of adding just social media presence with Curry and Green and all these guys and what they do on social media, and Durant, although not everything around Durant's been positive in social media. but I feel like you don't need these teams to succeed. And I feel like most of the time it's also fans saying this. Like Kobe Bryant was on Fox Radio the other day, and he said something like, he said, again, something along those lines of, oh, well, when Los Angeles is better, then the NBA is better. Surprise, surprise, the guy who played for 20 years for the Lakers is going to say the NBA is better with the Lakers are better. That's like me saying the NFL is going to be better if the Chargers play well. And if you're a fan, you want your team to play well. That doesn't mean the league is going to be better if they do. It just means that there's another team to watch. But league, in my opinion, as many teams as you can get playing on the same highest level, the better that'll be for anybody. I don't care if it's all three teams in Texas that are playing well. And people say, oh, well, it's good for the NBA. No, it's good for the NBA if Texas has somebody to compete with. If the Lakers get good and they can match up with the Warriors again, that's going to be the best for the NBA. The more teams that you have that can play at a top level is better for any league of any sport. Like right now, Formula One is basically a two-driver race. Hamilton and Vettel. Those guys are about 50 points ahead of everybody else. Is that fun? Not really. It's kind of fun to watch these two guys go at it. There are 18 other drivers that are just kind of there. I don't want to watch a league when just the Lakers are doing good and there's 20 other teams that just kind of exist.
Yeah, it'd be nice if, you know, we had, you know, 30 teams that were all top-notch teams where it was like, oh, you're just going to lose this season just to lose, at least compete, and then we have 30 teams that are actually a good competition.
Yeah, exactly. So that just argument just annoys me a little bit. But that's the show. But before we go, I do want to give a quick shout-out to the Phoenix Suns because they gave Devin Booker a max contract. I love everything that's going on in Phoenix right now. They drafted well. They've given Booker the money he deserves. Oh, man, I'm excited. I want October to roll around just so I can see this team be good and try to win. But that's the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. Again, same time next week. You can follow me on Twitter at @MyTwoSpenceworth.
You can follow me on Twitter at @that_soundguy_Sean.
You can follow me on Instagram at Haley Clemens. That's HaleyIgh.
And that's the show. Thank you again. Have a safe weekend out there. Enjoy the Wing Fest. Don't go too crazy, Reno, but have fun. Peace.